Because it's so easy to move money around like this, of course, what happens is that people don't pay it off by the end of the month.
Correct.
And then they don't pay it all off by the end of the month that follows that either, and they keep using it. And the bank or the credit card company is always asking you to please pay the minimum, and that minimum is quite low. So it's a quite attractive way of delaying facing the fact that you've spent this money. As we all know, the whole society is now deep in credit card debt because it seems like a good idea at the time, but it's very easy to forget to pay it off each time. So we have people in a desperate situation because they have thousands of dollars of credit card debt and then eventually they cannot pay it. So that's what I want to turn our attention to next. So what is the information that people in this situation need to know, which the credit card companies will not tell them, as to how to resolve this emergency?
The big crime that is being committed in this whole situation as it is set up and implemented is called receiving secret commissions while acting as an agent. See, the credit card company is your agent. You're telling them, look, I've bought something for $100 from this merchant. I want you to pay the merchant $100. Now, this is exactly the same as if you had paid $10 to Purolator or UPS or Federal Express. Said, look, I want you to deliver a package to my parents in such and such Colorado, say. And Federal Express, without your knowledge or consent, goes to your parents and says, we have this package for you, but we're not going to hand it over unless you give us 3% of the value in the package. That's a crime, and it's called receiving secret commissions while acting as an agent. That is what the credit card companies are doing every time they effect a transaction. In fact, there's about 30 different criminal offenses every time you throw that lever and go ching-ching with your credit card and charge something. So what it does is it taints the paper. The bill of exchange becomes a constructive forgery in law. There's another section called omitting material particulars from a valuable security. The Visa voucher is defined as a valuable security in law. They have a duty to tell you on the face of it. They know what it is when you buy something, that there's a 3% discount or 2% or 1.5%, whatever it turns out to be. With American Express, it's as much as 6%, which is why merchants hate it so much. It does taint the paper such that it becomes uncollectible. Your bank, the Visa issuing bank, what it does is it debits your account that you have signed for up to a maximum of $5,000, $10,000, $50,000, whatever it is, for the proceeds in order to pay the bill and take their discount at that time. Now, when they convert it like that, that's technically money laundering. And it means that the contract itself is completely unenforceable. But it has to be done not through the courts, but through a process determined under the Bills of Exchange Act. If you read your credit card agreement very carefully, you will notice that often they will use the expression waive presentment. What you're agreeing is that under the Bills of Exchange Act, if for any reason there isn't money in your account to honor this bill that they present against it, and they refuse to increase your limit or whatever it is, then theoretically they have to come to you and give you 72 hours or 3 business days to make good on it. But by waiving presentment at the time you enter into the agreement, they don't have to do that anymore and they just debit the account directly. But it shows that they know what they're doing. Now, if this is not disclosed on the face of the document, then the paper becomes unenforceable. It's difficult to explain because the contract itself, your credit card agreement, is in and of itself a bill of exchange.
Can you describe unenforceable or define unenforceable in this situation? Where would this come up that it would be unenforceable?
It effectively is a conspiracy by the Visa triad to prevent you from realizing that you are participating in a secret commission scheme. Even though you have agreed to it, you'll notice if you read the card user agreement, what they do is they deliberately avoid telling you what it is they're going to do for you under the agreement. You're just left to assume it, that what they're doing is delivering 100% of the proceeds to the merchant. It just taints the paper and you can't enforce it.
Meaning can't enforce it because you can't collect on it, or if it's challenged, it won't hold up? Is that what you mean?
Yes, exactly.
Okay, well then, let's say that you have $10,000 in credit card debt and it's becoming a nightmare, and you find out this information. What are the consequences to you of beginning to realize what's been happening?
Well, the first thing you have to realize is that you can't lay back and don't let them take the offensive. You have to take the offensive. You cannot win this battle from a defensive posture. You have to go after them. You have to demand that they explain themselves.
So let's say that you've been paying your minimum payment all along, so you're not in default. When you say take the offensive, you mean at this point you should start taking action rather than wait until you're in trouble and wait until they're trying to collect from you and you've missed some payments.
Absolutely. The courts will seize upon the fact that you are in default and they won't listen to a word that you say. They will just say, oh, you're just trying to avoid paying this debt, et cetera, et cetera. If, however, you take the offensive when you are not in default, then you have the upper hand, and overwhelmingly so.
Give me a scenario of how I would initiate that and what my motive would be in doing this.
The motive is you want to avoid participating in what is legally defined as a criminal organization. You are dealing with a situation where, under Section 21 of the Criminal Code, if you with knowledge participate in this scheme, you become a party to it, even though you are the victim in a sense.
Or a totally unwitting participant. I didn't know that I was participating in a crime until after the fact.
Yes, until somebody told you.
Right.
And
so you're telling me now, and I'm suddenly realizing this.
Exactly.
Okay.
Now is the point where you have to do something about it. You have knowledge of it. Of course, you're always paying 3% more for everything you buy unwittingly because the secret commission is buried in the price of the merchandise. Mm-hmm. And if the merchant tells you about it, he's in trouble. In any event, what you have to do is you have to inform them. You have to write to them and you have to give them an opportunity to cure the defect, to say, look, I'm not trying to be unreasonable here. I'm not making any accusations. It just appears to me from this information I have received, you never told me you were using my money to finance this transaction. You led me to believe very, very carefully that I was receiving a free loan and that I was having the use of your resources when in fact you were using my resources and you were skimming 3% off the top of it every time I rolled it over. So these actions of yours, the apparent actions, Mr. Credit Card Company, appear to offend all of these different sections. And you have to do a little bit of research and find out which of them are being offended. And as I say, there's about 30 of them. It's not difficult. Once it's pointed out, you go, oh, yeah, that's really bad. They shouldn't be doing that. And then they have to cure. They have to come back with a reasonable explanation as to what is happening. And we've been sending these things in now for almost a year. And nobody is responding.
In other words, you outline this question, as it were, or statement of discovery, that you've come across this information and you put it all in a letter, which is properly worded.
Yes.
You send it to the credit card company and you say, because of this, I no longer want to participate in a criminal action. Therefore, it seems improper for me to make any payments on this thing, which was fraudulent at the start, even though I've used this up to the extent of $10,000 and I've been paying on it every month. I see that that is an error, so I'm going to stop now.
Exactly.
That's it. And then you don't pay anymore unless you get a reaction. And what you're saying is that when you send this letter for the last year in Canada, you've had no response.
We've had responses when people simply send the letter in and don't do anything else about it. If, however, you send the letter and have it notarized, which is a form of registration, such that they cannot deny, and you send it by registered mail or by courier or what have you, they're afraid to respond. They can't respond because you've got them sort of trapped between a rock and a hard place. They're committing two fundamental crimes, but the two crimes that they cannot seem to weasel out of is the fact that they're using your money without your permission to fund the transaction, and that's a fraud in and of itself. And on the other hand, they're receiving a secret commission while acting as an agent, even if it were their money, which it isn't. So you got one crime compounding the other, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Now, when you register that and you formally put them to the test, and we call it a notification of suspension of the account pending a resolution of the following issues, and force them to respond, they don't have any choice. What are they going to say? Too bad. You signed the contract. But you see, part of the research is the English law principle that applies throughout that says, if the issue of fraud or misrepresentation or these issues are raised, then the contract itself becomes unreliable because it's kind of silly to rely on a contract where you're alleging fraud. So what's been happening is the people who have registered these documents and given them the opportunity to formally cure the defect under the Bills of Exchange Act, we're not hearing anything back. I was just talking to a woman. She sent the letter in. It's a 20-page report, but it's fairly straightforward and it's very reasonable. It says, look, I'm trying to be reasonable here. Convince me that you haven't involved me in this criminal enterprise. And I'll resume payments under the contract. She notarized it. She gave them 3 days to cure the default, 72 hours, which is the standard under the Bills of Exchange Act. She gave them a second fault, another 72 hours, and then she gave them a 10-day final notice to cure the default, and that was last August. She hasn't heard back from them yet.
Now, is it still possible that she might hear back from them at some time, or has the fact that they've outrun their 72-hour response time or whatever she indicated, is that
It's final.
Much closed it.
That's the end of it.
It's presumed that it is dropped.
Yes, and they'll do that to you too. You'll notice that if you're being sued by somebody, they will send you documents that give you 72 hours to respond or 10 days or whatever point in the process you're at. And if you don't respond, they will get a default judgment against you.
Right. So the details of the language are, of course, very important. It's not something that you'd recommend somebody just improvise and try out. It needs to be done with a good knowledge of all the statutes.
Oh, absolutely.
So it shouldn't be done by a lay person, as it were, unless they've specialized and studied this. It's something that you can assist somebody with if they need the help with that.
You have to do your homework and know what you're talking about, because these people will try and bamboozle you and try and, you know, the shell game, shuffling, whatever it takes to get you to take your eye off the ball for a minute, and then they'll try something new. But if you stick by your guns and you say, no, we are not going anywhere until you cure this default, once you put them through the formal steps, the 3-day, 3-day, and 10-day period, they're dead in the water. There's nothing they can do.
Now, what happens, if anything, to your credit status?
You've got sections 300, 301, and 302 of the criminal code, which make it a criminal offense to threaten libel. If they threaten to report you to a credit reporting agency without full details of why you stopped paying, then they are guilty of committing extortion by threat of libel, is what it's called. They're basically saying, look, either you do what we tell you to do, or we're going to badmouth you to the credit reporting agency and you're finished. That's a criminal offense of itself. And even if they have cause, they can't do that. Mm-hmm. And so you have to make them know that you are aware of this.
Generally, people get things on their credit report all the time which are inaccurate. So it's easy to allege something and have it show up there, and it's still a nuisance to get it cleared up. So to prevent it, you have to let them know in advance that you won't allow it. And then if it happens anyway, what steps do you take?
What you would do is that you would then launch an action against them and sue them for damages. You would have to make some kind of an estimate of what it is costing you to be cut off the credit system. Essentially quantify the damages from the fact that they have libeled you. That's a civil action and not a criminal action. But you can seek, you know, double, triple damages and that sort of thing.
But so far, have you seen this problem with the credit agencies come up as a result of the letter and cutting off the payments to the credit card companies?
No, I haven't seen it except in cases where they've been in default already, such that the report has already been made when the process stops. And for whatever reason, they don't seem to go and remove it. We sort of nipped it in the bud by having a few people that we've come in contact with who have done this from an upper hand position where they haven't been in default, and the banks just go away, basically.
Now, a lot of us have credit debit cards, sometimes combined, and you have a choice with certain merchants as to which form of application to use with this card, whether you want it as a debit or a credit. Can you talk about the differences and some of the implications of that?
Okay, you notice if you go into a supermarket, Safeway or something like that, the clerk will always ask you these days whether you want some extra cash with that if you're going to use your debit card. And so you can take an extra $20 or to $100 or whatever it is. So clearly the banks don't have any general objections to supermarket clerks acting as bank tellers. And in fact, it reduces their need to handle cash, so it reduces their costs. They're all for it. If, however, you're paying for the same bag of groceries with a Visa or MasterCard, which is becoming increasingly common, there's no way they will let you have extra cash, because there is that 3% discount that is attached to it, that the credit card companies are absolutely paranoid that you, the cardholder, do not know is there. Because if you did, you'd realize that that free credit is in fact costing you about 40% per annum. It's a huge amount of money. In Canada, they're skimming approximately $3 billion a year off the top of the economy in these so-called merchant discounts. And any merchant who dares to reveal it is cut off fairly quickly. We had a fellow in Nanaimo who had an independent gas station, and he put up a sign that said surcharge 2% to cover the cost of the Visa discount. And within 2 hours, the banks were calling him, and they had found out about it, and said, you take that sign down or you're finished. Read your contract. It says you agree, and this is illegal too for them to put it in the contract, not to discourage people from using the Visa card as preferable to any other payment instrument. They won't say cash per se, because they know that the stipulation itself is illegal. And so they use the most amazing language, you know, legalese, to achieve this. For example, in Boston in 1991, there was, it was called the Boston Fee Party, when all of the restaurants revolted against American Express because they were demanding 5% off the top of every bill. And the customers, of course, were insisting on using it because they think they're getting a free loan. It doesn't cost them anymore. And this happened in Toronto too. They made an example out of one restaurant that put little display cards on the tables that said, we pay 2% for Visa, 3% for MasterCard, and 5% for American Express. Please use cash or check if you can. These things are incredibly expensive. And there was a big picture on the front page of the Boston Herald, I think it is. It said, the Boston Fee Party and had a picture of this restaurateur with this American Express card impaled on the end of this foot-long butcher knife. And the official story was that only the chairman of the board, who was James Robertson III at the time, of American Express could set the rates. The salespeople who went out there to sign up the restaurants, they had no discretionary power whatsoever. The 5% discount is carved in stone. But it's different for gasoline than it is for meals in expensive restaurants. Mm. Because the margins on gasoline are so tight that they can only handle maybe a 1% discount, 1.5. Whereas the price sensitivity in an expensive restaurant is far less a factor, and so they can conceal a 5% secret commission in the apparent price of the meal, and it becomes quite a bit more, even though according to their official story, the price at the fancy restaurant, the discount, ought to be substantially lower than mm-hmm. the gas station because the average charge is $200 versus $30. So if you look at Amex advancing $95 and getting back $100 21 days later, that's an effective annual rate of 144%.
So and that's, they're doing well.
They're doing very well.
Now, just to clarify, so when you use the debit card and the clerk says, would you like some cash back, we just don't recognize that that question never comes up when we use the credit card, of course. They don't say, would you like some cash back when you offer to use it the same card as a credit card rather than a debit card.
Well, yes, the Safeway clerks are trained not to ask when it's a Visa or MasterCard and only to ask when it's a debit card. I was speaking to a restaurant in Vancouver. It had a big sign up recently and it said, we don't accept debit cards because it was a 31-cent transaction charge. So on a cup of coffee, that's an expensive transaction. So they couldn't take the debit card. Your average Visa MasterCard charge is about $100 overall. So your 3% is costing you $3. So they're claiming that the transaction cost on a debit card is 31 cents, but the average transaction cost on a Visa is $3. So it's a tenfold, 1,000% more increase. As an economist, I know that a good, healthy economy is supposed to grow at the rate of about 3% per year. These guys are encouraging everybody to run the purchase through the transaction, even if you don't need the credit facility or what you believe to be a credit facility, for the purpose of getting this free loan for 21 days, whereas in fact, they are taking 3% off the top every statement period, with about 10 of them in a year from their point of view. This about every 36 days is what's called a rollover period. So that every 36 days, these people are raking 3% off the top of the economy at an annual rate of about 45%. So you see, all of this hyperinflation in the economy from all this money that's being created by these institutions is being countered and balanced by a hyper vacuum effect of sucking the liquidity out of the economy through these fees and transaction fees. And you get them on checks as well, but mostly on Visa, MasterCard, American Express. The debit cards, it's still substantial. It's very much, because they're also demanding the same from the merchant. Because when you use a debit card, you're paying 31 cents, so is the merchant. So they're collecting 62 cents. That, too, is secret commission while acting as an agent.
Hmm. Is there any remedy that you can use vis-a-vis debit cards? I don't quite see how that would be in any way the same.
No, debit cards would be very, very difficult to get your remedy because the money is instantaneous. It's gone.
That's right, and it's coming out of your account.
Right. So you'd have to force them to pay back the money to you. It could only be handled by some kind of class proceeding or class action lawsuit. You couldn't do it on an individual basis. It would be very difficult.